Okay. Could you kind of stay all your names?
Well, that's what I'm going to do. I'm Roger Delaware. I worked up in North Scarborough when I was in high school and for almost a year after, and then I left there and went to work for General Motors.
1960s.
Yeah, this would be, this whole scenario will be the very late 50s and early 60s. We're looking at 55, 60 years ago. And that's the only houses we're going to recognize in this, just from that period of time. And the reason I wanted to do that, these boys, they come down to the house from time to time and get a sticker on their car or something, and we shoot the breeze. And I get thinking, you know, I'm looking around, that all the folks that I used to know up there are gone. And I figured, boy, while there's three, four, or half a dozen of us around, we better pencil it in so we know what's going on. And yeah, that's my tie with it. I delivered oil, kerosene and heating oil, to people for about a 6-mile radius of that coal kill corner. And that's how I get to know a lot of the older folks that lived up there. And that's where I run into Bert the first time. He was living in the, well, this is Bert Cox, and he grew up right in that section, married a lady, and had an old farm he stayed in up there, and he knew everybody around the intersection. You fill him in, Bert. And
yeah, I'm Bert Cox. I'm Wilton, Maine originally. I graduated in 1960 from Wilton Academy and came down here to live in Scarborough on the Harry Missouri place. I had a room there, and I worked on Tukey's Bridge in Portland for W.H. Inman. And I worked there a while and went back up north and worked at paper mill in Jay. I came back down here to work on a bridge in Falmouth. I met my wife, and we eventually married, and I stayed right in that area, right in the same house there for a long time, and then we built a new home down on another piece of property down the road there behind Wendell Missouri's.
That was about what year that you moved back here?
Did we move down where we are now?
Well, that's okay. Just generally, 1950s?
No, 86 or 87, I think. We moved down to where we are now. It was on a man-made pond. We've got 15 acres in there. And we back off the road, nice and quiet, no traffic, and love it, just like Roger.
I'm Clayton Skillen, and I've lived in North Scarborough all my life. So started out down across from the new road, and in 58 we moved up to the corner of Saco Street and Gorham Road.
Wayne?
You want me?
Oh, yeah, of course you want
me. I'm Wayne Chick. I live in Westbrook, and what started me on this was reading my aunt's diary from the early 1900s, 1911 through 1920. She talked about coal kiln corners. Well, I knew nothing about coal kiln corners, so that brought me over here to find out the history of coal kiln corners, where it was, etc., etc., and here I am.
Cool. Can I get you to remove your hand?
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. It's just,
I'm all in.
It shades your face so much because the lighting's from above.
Well, we start in. I thought it over, and probably the best thing to do is start in at the corner where the Saco Street and 22 meet right there. And take it from there and follow the road out a mile in each direction, because that little store in that area, anybody within a mile probably traded there. And I figure that's the extent we'll cover it, and that'll be pretty busy there. So why don't we start at the corner? And at the corner, there used to be a church way back. The church had come down, and a guy who sold meat and everything else, his name was Vail, built that corner and built a little filling station there and had a little oil business. And across the street from him, I gotta get acclimated here. My blinking map not quite right.
Jump in, guys, if you've got anything to say.
Yeah.
Like the fellow says, I know a lot, I just can't think of it. Vale's in that corner, and we're going to head up 22. Sherman was across the road, directly across the road, the Marles family lived. There was a little house right there in that corner. As I recall, it had some shade trees around it, quite a lot of shade trees around that house. The Archie and John and who helped me with the rest of the family, you probably knew.
William was Archie's twin brother.
Yep. Two of them were born. The physical problems, I guess, I don't know what you'd call it today, like muscular dystrophy or something like that.
Yeah.
And one of them was, he was quite slow. And then rest of his brothers were just as sharp as a pin. They were nice people. They were all nice people. As we go up from Sherman's, and Sherman, O.E. Sherman, was there back into the 1800s.
Was that the store?
That was Sherman's the store, and it was a Gulf station with a few pumps out front.
Okay.
And he sold grain there and household goods and... you name it, he sold it. He cashed everybody's check that come out through from Portland to go back to Buxton or whatever. He usually had money enough to cover it.
My mother's parents lived on Mitchell Hill Road, and I remember my grandfather used to do a lot of business at Sherman's store.
Well, everybody did. You know, Joe was one real nice person.
I don't remember the people per se, but I remember going to the store with my grandmother and my mother.
The post office was there too, wasn't it? Post office?
I don't
know. At Sherman's store?
No, I don't ever remember.
I don't remember that.
No.
Okay.
As we head up, the next house there, was that Palin?
Yeah, that was... Ari Sherman lived there too, wasn't
it? Yeah. Mrs. Palin taught school.
Yeah.
And then we go up a little further up on that side of the street, and the next house... You probably knew him.
Well, Dyer's, that was a Sherman house way back.
Yeah.
It was a brother to Ari. And then the Dyer's was there.
Yeah.
Then after, the Dyer's sold it to Kennedy.
Right. And Bob Kennedy, I remember when he showed up here, he come up from Massachusetts in a big station wagon with kids hanging out every window.
Yeah.
And he bought that farm. Really nice guy, really nice person. And the family lived there, and his wife died there. And then he did a few years ago.
Well, he passed away before she did.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Next house after Dyer, then would have been Youngvale.
Yeah.
That would have been Sunnyvale, Leon's boy. The next house after that was Brad Roberts built a house in there in that period of time. And then we go from Brad's establishment to Morrell. There was a Morrell in there, and they had they raised hens and sold eggs in Portland. I had the unfortunate experience of coming there, and a man had committed suicide. That would have been 64, maybe, along in there. And I had to go across the street and get Royce O'Donnell to come over, and he got the police to come up and everything. That was kind of miserable. We go from there, and in across from Bert Libby's blacksmith shop is being metal finishing. And they plated and did that type of work in there for about a 15, 20 year tenure. I don't know what it's saying now. The next house above that was O.G.K. Robinson. I think we're getting pretty close to the Gorham line there.
You're over it.
Just over it.
Yeah.
So we go up from there. The next one was Buddy Reed. He was crazy over horses. He raced sulkies and stuff at all of the fairs and so forth. There's another little house there, and I don't know who that belonged to at the time when I was there. The name was Johnson, and he had something to do with the airport over to Portland. Beyond there's the church. Well, there's a house in there, but I never knew who that was. It was a pretty good-sized house.
Yeah, it's where the veterinary is now.
All right. Do you know what it would have been back at that period of time?
No.
Well, I didn't have any contact with them either. The next place is the church. And from the church, the guy on the very corner, I've got some slippage in my memory. I don't remember who was there, but you cross the intersection on 114, the Tapleys lived there.
Yep.
They were a logging outfit. The whole family was involved in tree cutting.
What about Barbadil?
Well, you're passing through Barbadil right now. This is the area. Don't know the history of that, other than it was named that. I don't... that's why I was kind of hoping to get a hold of Jeannie Robinson, because she knew something about that. But I haven't been able to contact her. After the Tapleys, the next were the Moulton boys, and they weren't boys. At the time I was up there, they were my age. But they knew where all the good fishing was.
That's important.
Very, very. And the next house... Beyond that, I knew where Horse Feathers was up there, because that was Bert Libby's house his two sisters lived in. That was on the left-hand side, not the right. Coming back down, Sanborn had a dairy farm there.
Yep.
And he worked at the blind school, I believe, out to Mackworth Island. We're coming back down. I don't remember anything there until you get to Bob Miller, who taught at the college. He was right on the very corner of the Mitchell Hill Road.
The yellow house?
Yeah.
The big yellow house, yeah.
Right across from King. King owned that corner and sold vegetables and so forth even back then. Up that road was the South Gorham Cemetery. And there was a guy named Sanborn that worked at the mill. He had a nickname of Sandy, that's all I...
Yeah. Pratt.
You probably knew him.
Yeah.
They called him Pratt?
No.
No.
Sandy. Preston Sanborn was his name.
Yes. Yeah.
Preston.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice chap.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Across from him, there was a box mill. And that was Greenleaf.
Yeah.
Yeah, he lived down in Scarborough on the Black Point Road. Of course, then we moved back down to King on that corner, and then as you're coming down that road again, there were no houses until you got to Bert Libby's blacksmith shop. And he was an interesting chap. In this time period, he was long gone. But I remember him as a little boy going up with my mother and him sharpening bull points. My dad was blasting his foundation out of ledge, and he was sharpening bull points up there. And of course, as a little boy, I'm listening to all of his poems. And he had some that my mom told me not to repeat. he was quite a character.
And, well, tell some of it.
We're all adults.
Pretty much. One of them is stuck with me, and I remembered pieces of it, even as a little kid. pure water is a drink for me. I'll drink no wine, no brandy. Besides being pure and clean, it is always handy. And a drunkard likes his stronger drink. It's bound to bring him sorrow. Instead of being home at night, he'll be in the ditch tomorrow. And he had several stanzas of this, and he had some others that were, I don't remember enough of them to be repeated.
Tell the story about the needle eye.
Oh. Bert was a bit of a character. He was an old batch, and he lived with his sisters, and his brag was, and rightfully so, he's very talented.
Oh, yeah.
Very talented person. He says, yep, smart ass. Smart ass, that guy up the road, he's a smart ass. And he says, he's always trying to pull something on me. Well, he come down one morning. It was Bernie Kimball married the daughter. You remember Becky, Bernie's wife? Well, it was her father, anyhow. He come down there, and he left a needle. It was broke off. The eye was broke. And he brought it in, and he stuck it in the wonder stool. He says, Bert, you said you can fix anything. You fix that needle? Yeah, fix it. Leave it there. And he went out and went into Portland with his goods. He was a dairy farmer. Bert says, he thinks he's got me. In mid-morning, he went down to Sherman's to get some, he called it East Indies goods. It was coffee or tea or whatever he was getting. He asked Sherman if he had a package of needles. Sure. Sherman went and got him a package of needles. How much that be? 50 cents. So Bert paid him, went back out. Took one of the needles out, about the same size as the guy had left, and he lit a match and heated the end of the needle, so it was all hot, let it cool, stuck it back in the wonder stool. Well, that guy come back in the afternoon, pulled in, figured he was going to have some fun with Bert. He says, did you get that needle fixed? And Bert says, yeah, it's all taken care of. What do I owe you? Well, I guess 50 cents would be all right. He went out, got in his truck, drove off. Bert says, smart ass, I got all the rest of the needles. he was a character. And so we come back down that road, headed for Vales, on Route 22, and you had a schoolhouse there, a one-room school. Eventually, they tore that down and put a state park in there, place to pull off, picnic area. Later on, it got so everybody was staving everything up there, and of course today it's an intersection where you swing to get up on from 114 to 22.
Did you go to that school, Clayton?
No, I went to Libby School down.
Yeah, you went to Libby School down on 114.
Yeah.
I went there for about a week.
Did you?
Yeah. I didn't get thrown out for anything. But they moved me to another school. Now, we're headed down that road. You guys must have known the people that had that house headed down towards Vales on the right. You remember who lived there? I don't.
Now, whereabouts? You've lost me.
Well, we've gone by the state park.
Yeah.
Or the picnic area or school, whatever you want to.
Oh, Phineas Meserve.
Okay. No. You're going down 114.
Yeah.
We're staying on 22.
It was one of the Shermans, wasn't it? One of the brothers there.
Somebody told me that.
Will?
No, maybe. Will lived across the street. Where?
Wasn't the one that was blind or something and messed up?
Could have been. I don't know. But I think it was a Sherman.
I thought my wife said that one of the Shermans lived in that. It's where the carpet flooring people are now.
Yeah.
Then it was, before that it was, Blanny's lived there.
Yeah.
They went to church where Gail did. But before them, way back, I think Maddie Brown said it was So Gail was one of the Shermans lived there, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to go from there. And the next one was Sherman's daughter.
Nelson.
And you want to continue down 22 so we get 22 taken care of?
Yeah.
All right. On the left-hand side of the road is Cliff Tim. He had a little shingle mill there, and he cut bolts of wood and cut shingles and packaged them, pine.
What year did he close that? Because I can just about remember that as a little kid going out there with my uncle.
Oh, no, it was, I moved over where I am now in 72, 73, and every once in a while he'd go out and make shingles then. Yeah. So,
because my Uncle Mac was friends of him somehow.
Yeah.
And I remember going out there as a kid, because we're talking the 50s now.
Yeah, no, he ran it in the 70s.
Okay.
But he would go out and saw him, and his boy would go out and help him, but he didn't have nothing to do with the sawmill.
But he had all his fingers, too.
Oh, yeah.
His father is missing something.
Yeah. And
it goes to the territory.
Yeah, shingles.
I don't know who I run into, but somebody had a, it was Baldy Thompson up in Standish. He'd bought a shingle mill. And he wanted somebody to show him how to run it. And what the hell was his name?
Cliff?
No, the boy.
Oh, you dropped.
Well, anyway.
Yeah.
The boy, I went over and talked to him because Cliff had passed away. He says, I'll go up and tell him, but he says, I won't touch it. Like he said, I got all my fingers, and I'm, because them things was terrible on fingers.
Oh, yeah.
There's one up the Freiburg Fair that they run every year.
Yeah.
And it is. It's going flopping back and forth.
Well, OSHA would have a fit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Shall we go by?
Ralph. This,
yeah, Ralph.
Was the boy.
Cliff come across one morning. It was in November. Stiff wind, 18 degrees. And he said, you wouldn't come over and get my mill started. And I says, yes. Leon says, call me Bob. He says, we'll send Bob over and he get it running. So I went over and pulled all the spark plugs out of that mill and brought them over and dried them off. And I told him to get a tea kettle of hot water. So it was a little Continental engine. Well, I get over there, and he come out with a tea kettle of water, and I get the spark plugs in there, get it fired up and running. He come back out. He gone into the house again. He come out with a mug, a tin mug. I think it probably held a quart. And he had donuts on what fingers he had left. And he says, you want a donut? And I says, no, I'm all set. He was dipping the donuts in this mug. It was lard, hot lard. And he was eating them donuts and putting them away, and he's in a little thin flannel shirt, cold in the dickens. Oh, I was cold.
Yeah.
And I was dressed for it. And he's out there, and he got all done. I made sure that I stayed with him, made sure the engine was running, going good. And he was out there most of the day, cutting shingles that day. But he drank that after he got done with the donuts. He tipped that ladle up and drank the rest of that warm lard. That man lived to be an old guy.
He was an old man.
And he was a tough old cookie, I'll tell you.
Oh, yeah.
But I never forgot that. I didn't almost turn my stomach watching him. But we left him, and we come down. The next one's Lawrence Mary. Now, do you know when that house went in there? It was after I left working for Vale.
Yeah, because that burnt. 59. The Hillocks lived there.
That's right. That's right.
And that burnt. And then Lawrence Mary bought it.
Built a house.
And built that house, yeah.
Now, in back of that, there was a sawmill.
Yep.
What was that guy's name?
Herb McKinney.
Herb McKinney. Now, he worked for O.E. Sherman from time to time. Drove truck.
Probably.
Delivered grain.
Did a little of everything.
Yeah.
Worked in the woods. And
yeah.
He had where Lloyd Larry lived in Saco. Him and Esther lived there before. Okay. He was married to a teacher at Libby School.
Right. Yeah.
There's another little house there. I'm not sure if it's beyond Mary or right in here. Genesis lived there.
The little house is still there. Beyond Mary's.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
And Gail bought her first car there off those people. 1951 Chevy or something. And then the same car you and Wayne put new valves in or something.
Yeah.
All right. We're headed out there. And I don't know who had that set of houses before you get to the big field where Roger Knight's farm is today.
Well, that house of Genesis would be the only one that was there, wasn't it?
That's all I remember, but I didn't know who lived there.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know who lived there, but yeah. No, it was that one house in the 60s that was there.
Yeah. All right, well, there's Roger Knight on the top of the hill on the left. And as you get down over the hill, there was nothing to the, that's about the Westbrook thing. Across from it was Nate.
Chapman.
Chapman. He collected motorcycles.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he was an old guy, and he had the barn was right full of old-time motorcycles.
Yep.
First time I ever rode on one was one he had there. So we come back, cross the street, and head back down. There was who was the guy that played guitar in all the hillbilly bands around there?
Oh,
sold cars. Larson.
Larson.
Elmer.
Elmer Larson.
Elmer Larson.
Yeah.
And then the next house was Copperthwaite. It was a farm in on the hill.
Yeah.
Now we cross Big Field, and the first house I remember after the Big Field was Bobby Tinkham. There might have been another house there, but
Tinkham, yeah, Barry lived down below.
Okay.
They always lived there. Yeah. I don't know what his first name was.
Ralph.
I don't
Ralph
know.
Barry.
Yeah.
No, Ralph lived on Beach Ridge Road. Maybe he might have been Ralph.
Another
too.
Ralph. Think.
Yeah, it could have been Ralph. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Ralph. He had a chicken there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right, we go from there. Then Bobby Tinkham, who worked for the railroad.
Yeah.
Then we got the Grange Hall. And then the next house, now Harry Adams was there, but I was trying to think who it was then.
Goslin.
Goslin. Yes, that's correct. Now I remember the name. Then Sandville.
No, Sandville was below the Grange.
Before.
Headed towards Vales.
Before the Grange.
On the other side of the Grange.
Yeah. The DeVoe lived there then for a while, Bob DeVoe.
Yeah, well, them two farmhouses, right side by side, one was DeVoe and one was Sandville.
Right, okay.
And Lawrence Mary started out in the DeVoe place.
Okay.
Way back.
Yeah, I know the DeVoe guy. He came and shot muzzleloaders with us for a while, and then something happened. He jumped on a motorcycle and left his whole family.
Yeah, he took
went
off
to California.
I don't know where he went.
No, they say he went to California. I couldn't picture him doing that. He was a nice chap, but I guess he had enough. We head back, and on the corner is Eddie Veria.
Yeah,
he worked. Didn't he work with the well drilling people?
Yes.
He worked for Vail, actually, before
yeah,
he
for a while,
there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he went up to Hillux to work.
Yeah. He's a good mechanic.
He worked for the state back in 53.
Yeah.
He snowshoed from there down to the state garage there by the overpass.
Wow.
And brought a big truck up and plowed 114 up through.
Wow. Ha!
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
He wasn't plowed out for 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
And the guy didn't know at the time, but they said that he had snowshoed down and got that truck.
I believe it. Yeah, quite a character. Then there was a sturgeon.
Do you know anything about that house? They say that house is a real old house, the one on the corner.
I believe it is, because
it's been resurrected several times.
It used to be a big barn. The house sat here and off in it, well, basically facing the corner. There was a big barn, an old Charlie Mack. I can remember him. I wasn't very old, but he sat in front of the barn door all summer long. You'd go by there and he'd be sitting in front of that door. But he was probably 85, 90 years old then.
That was his perch. Huh?
Yeah, and I don't know. I can't really remember when they tore the barn down or fell down. Or
I remember seeing it, but not when I was up there working.
Yeah.
I think so. Torn down sometime in the 50s, probably. All right, beside Viria, we're headed down Sockle Street on that same side. We had Sturgeon.
Yeah.
And then we had a, you know him, Bert. He was a
neighbor
to me.
Eli.
Eli Mayo.
Yeah, Eli
Boy,
Mayo.
Mabel, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice man.
Yes, he was. Good scout. Good scout. And then we got you at the old farm. Who was the guy that came there one summer? I think, I want to say Parker. Maybe it wasn't. He was on his third wife. He was 90 years old. And he told Leon, and Leon says, are you going to get married again? And he says, yeah, I married her. And he was living in a little camp right there in that field.
He was over here.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Charlie Parker.
Charlie Parker.
His wife, Betty.
Yeah.
Charlie owned a store in Portland, a variety store. And they always said that he had the first dollar ever made.
But he might have.
Nice old people, though.
Yeah, they were. Yeah. They were.
That's where Howard Maxfield used to live. Yeah.
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 That little camp.
Yeah, a small house there, yeah.
Yeah.
It was like a fire barn.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Now, you got your fire barn and Maxfield. And I remember one of the first times it was a chimney fire. And I'm out there waiting on somebody to change the tire or doing something out the yard. Who comes jumping out of the, I hear the door slam, Sherman. He's got a felt hat on. He always wore a tie and a shirt and a sweater. And he come bouncing across, a little stocky fella. And I said, Leon, I said, what's going on? He says, he's the one starts the fire truck. So he come bustling across the road there at a fast walk, and his tie blown out, so forth. And pretty soon, the first thing I hear is a siren. He got the truck running, and he turns the siren on, and then he opens the doors. Well, it was an old Ford fire truck, and he pulled it out. The smoke coming out of that building, it looked like the building was a fire. and he sat there revving that thing up. Pretty soon, some other folks started showing up, and he roared out of there. But the siren was going full tilt, and he was only doing about 4 miles an hour. Oh, yeah.
But they used to call him.
Yeah.
Up around there, if there was a fire, they would call Joe. They wouldn't call Elizabeth.
Right. Didn't call dispatch. They
called
him.
Call. Yeah.
Yeah. He was a nice guy. Now, if we follow that road down through, we'll cross the intersection of the pines on the corner was the first place Vale was.
Right.
Now, I don't know this to be a fact, but I'd heard there was a one-armed bandit in the closet in there. Is that true?
Don't know. There's two bathrooms on each side.
Yeah.
It might have been. I don't know.
Well, a state cop that I become friends with was in the, he operated with a sidecar and a motorcycle in the 30s.
Oh.
And he's a Carl Wiebe.
Yeah.
And Carl says, we all knew it was there. They had the one-armed bandit in there. And And I don't know if that's when Vail was there, but I think it probably was. It wouldn't have surprised me any.
Yeah, because my mother's uncle started it.
Yeah.
And he was shot in 41.
Yeah.
And Vail went in then, what, 46, maybe 45.
46, yeah, right, just right. The end of the war.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was there to what, 50?
About when he built the other place.
But it was right full. You couldn't basically walk through it. He had everything in there, clothes.
Oh, yeah.
This very well could have been, but I'd only been, what, 9 years old, 10 years old?
Yeah, so. You wouldn't have been interested in that.
No.
Probably the first gamble in the sky.
Say they had a lump drum in the front, right?
No, that was next door where the house is.
Oh, okay.
Willis turned the house around.
Say they ran the lunch room?
Yeah.
What was the name? You said your mother's aunt.
My mother's uncle?
Uncle, I'm sorry.
Raymond McKinney.
McKinney.
Yeah, he moved that tin building out of Portland.
Really?
Yes. I think it was 39, they started that gas station.
Yeah, and that garage had a pit in it.
Yeah, but that was afterwards.
Yeah.
That they built that 51, 52. It was after Vail moved that they built that garage.
Yeah, okay. Well, we headed down, and then at that period of time, you had a trailer there for a while.
Yeah.
And then we got Linwood Robinson, Bud, I called him. He worked at the mill, but he repaired old cars and everything. He's a character. Then we got Don Hersey. Is that correct?
Yep.
Yeah. Now, there was something there where Hersey was way back. Somebody told me something.
Don't.
Says a car shop on this Cold Kill Corner map.
It says D. Libby Car Shop.
Now, at that period of time, what would they have called? There weren't any automobiles when that map was put together. So what would they have been, all in wagons there or something?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know, never heard that.
No, I didn't until I see that map that Becky brought home. New to me. Well, we go from Don Hersey, that whole flat, there was nothing other than, until you get down to Bud Lord.
Bud Lord.
And then just beyond there, of course, Annie Lord on the other side.
Across the street.
She had a little store there. I used to deliver oil in. I always had to go in and have tea and a cookie with her. That's the way it had to be. Now that road went in across to the Ma farm.
Yep.
And that's where everybody put their cattle in the summer, that whole area, and then all the farms had them in there, big fields in there. Of course, big pit in there now, Higgins.
Yeah, big hole.
Yeah, big hole in the ground. We'll follow that down and a ways until you get to Leroy Elquist on the hill. I think he taught school, didn't he?
Yeah. Peaks Island, I believe.
Yeah. Then the next one was Jerry Link.
Yeah.
And from Jerry Link, we head up over the hill, and the doctor had the farm there. It was an Elquist farm. And then the doctor moved in there later on. He's retired there now.
Yeah.
To Chase, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
And
was it a reserve at one time? No?
Not that we know.
Reserves was in across from Annie Lord going into my farm.
Yes.
That was the old reserve homestead or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. There's a nice barn there.
Yeah, but in back of the barn there was a house.
Oh, yeah. Burned.
Yeah.
That's where Molly was born there, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going down, and we get to the Beach Ridge farm. Well, we go by the end of the Berry Road, and there was a Peabody farm way down in there.
Yeah.
And a dairy farm. There was one family living in there when I was a kid on the left. The guy worked on stoves and furnaces and Bruns.
Yeah.
His name was Bruns. He had a whole passel of kids. That's it for that road. We'll head by Pearson is there now. Pearson wasn't there. It was Mary, Fuller Mary, had that big farm. And
is she the one that moved houses?
No, Jimmy moved houses.
Yeah, Jimmy's a
he lived different basically Mary. Across the street. Jimmy grew up, let's see.
Yeah, right across from Link.
Yeah.
George Mary lived there. Right.
That's Jimmy's father.
I see him the night he committed suicide.
Is that right?
He come in and got gas in his car. He says, I got to fill it up. And that was odd because he only bought normally a dollar. Dollar to get you 5 gallons of gas.
Yeah.
You know, five for a buck. And he filled it right up and went home. His wife had left him with the kids. And taken the kids and gone. And George sought the world of his family. He worked at the mill.
Yep.
And that's the last time I see him. Link heard the noise in the night. He looked over and evidently he'd rested his foot on the brake and the light was on in the little garage there. You could see it. He'd taken a bunch of pipe and vacuum cleaner hose and hit it in the window of that 51 Chevy, and he sat there and gassed himself. And he was the nicest old guy.
I forgot about that, actually.
Yeah.
That was his second wife, wasn't it? I don't think that was Jimmy's mother that left.
I had heard that, but I
don't know.
See, you lived up there.
Yeah, but no, yeah. I think that was his second wife.
Yeah. Now, way in on that same side is where George Mary, the farm in there was a Mary, and that was the one that moved up to North Scarborough.
Yeah, Lawrence Mary.
Lawrence, yeah. All right.
But before that, there was an old guy that lived there. What the heck was his name? He wasn't a Mary.
Libby?
Yes, I think it was.
Harry?
Harry Libby, that's right. Bow-legged.
Yeah.
He was bow-legged.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
He had cider in his cellar, too, didn't he?
Probably. I don't know.
Most of those farms did.
Yeah.
All right, we're down. We're going by Pearson. There wasn't anything until you get to the top of the hill where the tower used to be. During the Second World War, they had a tower there. They could look down into the harbor down there. I was trying to think of the fellow's name that lived where my sister's boy lives now. There were two brothers, and one of them, both of them were involved in detective and police work and so forth. One of them used to shoot on the Cumberland rifle team when we shot against them. The guy on the corner, the old Gulf Station, would have been Gertrude Emerson. That was a Gulf Station when I was a kid.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, right there at the four corners.
Yeah.
On the opposite corner was Ross Sherwood.
Right.
Had the old dairy farm,
yeah.
Beautiful old farm. Head up over the hill, coming back. Ruth Seavey? Had all the pretty flowers in the yard there.
Little house.
Yeah, little house. And then we went nothing until we get to Paul Peabody on the corner.
Yeah.
I just see his daughter at the doctor's the other day.
Is that right?
Deborah, yeah. She was in my class. Nice kid. She's living up Baldwin now. So that takes care of that blinking road up to the corner. Now, do we want to take that road and take it into Westbrook where this young fellow here was... Housed.
Yeah.
All right, we go from Cliff Tam. And the next one is Griffin. And then, as I remember, your house wasn't there. It's there now. It was Nelson.
Yeah, on the
is
other
that
side.
The correct? All right, the next place that I remember was Ben Roberts' house. on that side, left-hand uh-huh. side. Then Whitey had a TV
yeah.
repair shop there. He was crippled.
Yeah.
Now, didn't he marry one of Ben's
he married,
daughters?
Married Ben's daughters, yes.
Yeah. All right, we go a little bit further. There's a little camp in there in back of those houses. Isn't that where a guy named Welch lived?
See, I don't remember that. You told me that before.
Yeah, Lye Welch.
Yeah, I remember yeah. Lye Welch. Well, in fact, he lived down on Beach Ridge Road.
That's right. But he had a camp in there, and I don't okay. know if he went in there and camped certain times of the year or what was going on. There
okay,
was,
maybe, I don't
I think. Had to deliver kerosene in there.
Yeah,
he had a little burner in the corner.
Yeah, don't ever remember.
Yeah. It always amazed me that if you lit a match the place, it didn't blow up. He was a...
Yeah.
Yeah. Then we had Hillock.
Yeah.
Well, Wasumpski Springs is. And then the next guy beside Hillock was Tripp, and he sold fish.
Yeah.
Right,
peddled fish.
Yeah.
He used to come to my grandparents' house yeah. every Wednesday.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. He was a nice guy.
Harold, right?
Harold Tripp.
Harold Tripp.
Yeah.
He always smelled like fish, too.
Oh, yeah.
You couldn't get within a half mile of that truck. You knew the fish are. Right. All the cats in the neighborhood
for sure.
chasing it around.
For sure.
Across the power lines, and there's a road there, the Bracket Road, that goes across, and there really wasn't much for buildings until you, just before the river where Herrick last was. There wasn't many buildings on that road, and you get over where Gorham is, the Hawks owned a golf course there, and then a little further up that road was the Longfellow Farm. And across from the Longfellow Farm was the Berries. That boy, boy's my age, he moved up Washington County. His wife Judy died, and she owned a lot of land in Washington County. He's up there now.
Okay.
And he's selling gravel to the state. She had a gravel pit on the property. He's making money hand over fist.
Can I interrupt here?
Sure.
We got an argument, I won't say an argument, a discussion at Westbrook today. There used to be a guy that rode his bicycle
yep.
on Saco Street. I think yep. he lived in that first house
on the left.
On the yep. second floor on Bracket Road. What was his name? For some reason, Albert Austin comes to my mind.
It was Austin, but I don't know as I ever knew what his first name was.
Yeah, but he had them he picking bottles up.
Yeah, but he was...
He worked down the mill, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, and he rode his bicycle.
Yeah.
And he was killed.
Yes, he was hit by a car on
yeah.
his bicycle.
Where was that, in Westbrook? Or?
I think it was Westbrook. I can't.
I'd forget about him. I remember him now.
Yeah. Because I remember him, but I woke up in the middle of the night. Well, I get up at 2 o'clock to go to work, but I'm thinking, the guy's name was Albert Austin. Just come out of the blue, but...
It was Austin.
And he lived on the second floor of that house that you got a question mark
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
But he had something, he'd pass out, I can't remember now just what he had.
He liked beer barrel candy.
Did he?
Because he used to stop in Vales and go in, that was penny candy.
Yeah.
And he'd buy a whole fistful of it in a bag, and he used to like that beer barrel candy. Yeah. I'd forget all about him, but... He was around. Now, to head up that street towards Westbrook, Saco Street, was Mink Farm on the left.
Oh.
And that was owned by Lamprin.
Albert Lamprin.
Yeah. He was a fight promoter.
He had two sons, Louis, who was a nice guy, and Tony, who was a complete jerk. And Tony and I used to fight all the time.
Yeah.
And even,
well, the old man was a fight promoter.
Okay, I don't know that.
In Portland and, yeah. and around here, I get involved with him. Yeah. Then we go. There was a house across from him. You lived up there. Who was that family?
I gotta think about this. I don't know. Cause
Lance lived right on the corner. Not on the corner, but right on the Westbrook line, on the left going out.
Across from Lamprin?
Yeah.
All right. Lunt. Thank you. And then we come to Bovine, and that's where I drew the line.
That was my grandparents' farm.
Yeah. Now, didn't one of the daughters live right below there on the right on Saco Street?
Yep. No, Raymond actually lives there. All right.
Okay.
After you go by, this is the
territory. Because I remember seeing the name Bovine on the mailbox. Yeah,
that's Raymond.
Raymond.
After that, for my grandfather gave my father an acre of land. That white cape just beyond that was my father's, my parents' house.
Yeah.
And some people that lived in Friendly Village bought it. And Raymond lives right after that, same side of the road.
One of those girls just passed away, right?
Yeah.
That's what she said. And I don't know.
Well, I see it in the paper here, 3-4 days
ago. Pauline's daughter, right?
Yeah. It was two. It was Claire and Pauline.
Yeah. They were twins. Yeah, I get a picture that I was going to take down for Billy Timms to look at. He's down to the
Piper Shores.
Piper Shores. And he's got Lou Gehrig's disease. He can't move. Only a few of his hands. And I wanted to take those pictures down. They were down here at Dunstan School, you know, for him to see, because there's all his classmates that was in school with him.
Wayne, can you tell a little bit of the history of your grandparents' farm? You were saying before we set up the cameras.
What were their names?
Frank and Sarah. Okay. Franklin, actually. And they bought that in 1911 from the Trickey family. And my grandfather was a blacksmith by trade. But he decided at some point in time after they moved down from... Their first property was in Limerick, which is still there. And my cousin and I went there last summer. But anyway, he decided he wanted to go into the farming business. So he bought this property in Westbrook and went into the dairy business. And in the back of that house, the house was originally a two-room house. And it was added on and added on. The Trickeys added on. And it was as it was when my grandparents bought it. They had the Trickeys added on. But anyway, there was a set of Rufus Porter murals in that house. And there was never... My father and my aunts and uncles hunted for years to try and find a signature on that. They couldn't, there was no signature on it. Anyway, when Raymond sold that house, a private collector, as the Chick family understood it, a private collector bought those four walls and they went to Nantucket Island. Okay. So my father had the foresight to take pictures of the walls before the Chicks dumped the property. My cousin David and I stopped at the Rufus Porter Museum in Bridgeton one time, a couple summers ago. Showed this lady the pictures, and she said, "Those are Rufus Porter's." Well, I said, "How do you know?" She said, "You see the little guy in the sailboat with the top hat? Yep, that was his signature. He never put, you know, Rufus Porter in it, but that was his signature." Anyway, to make a long story short, she said, "I want to introduce you to the director." And she looked up, she said, "Oh my God," she said, "I just got an email from a guy in Nantucket who has a set of Rufus Porter murals that he wants to donate to this museum." So my cousin and I are looking at each other, "Do you suppose..." Anyway, to make a long story short, it's the same walls.
Well,
and so I went back to Mike Sampi, who's the mayor of Westbrook, is also the president of the Westbrook Historical Society. I said, "Michael, listen to this." He said, "We got to get those walls back to Westbrook." I said, "Okay." I said, "But you guys have got to deal with, the city of Westbrook has got to deal with the Rufus Porter Museum, so on and so forth. It's beyond, you know, it's out of my hands." So anyway, we got the economic developer involved, Daniel Stevenson. So it's been, well, it'll be a year in July. And I don't know what the status is, because this guy in Nantucket wants to remain anonymous. And he only wants to deal with the Rufus Porter Museum. And I keep hounding Daniel in the mail, like, "What the hell's going on?" So I just hope they haven't fallen through the cracks. But, you know.
the stones of the gods grind pretty fine.
Yeah.
It takes quite a while.
Yeah.
And then the chicks sold your farm?
Yeah, my grandfather died in 1954, and my grandmother stayed there with my Uncle Mac until he married an old school sweetheart and they all moved to Standish. They sold that, I believe, in 1960 to Alphonse, somewhere in that neighborhood. And the whole property just went downhill from there on out. And at one point in time, my mother had heard that Hilda wanted to panel over those walls. Now, if that ever came to be or not, I don't think so, but anyway. So that's my story of the Rufus Porter walls and the chick family, but
yeah.
We always, as I told the people at the Rufus Porter Museum, we as kids care less about the walls. The thing that infatuated us in that room was my grandfather's roll-top desk, which seemed like it was the size of this table to a bunch of little kids. And had all these neat little drawers in it.
Oh, yeah.
And so.
And then that Bovine was the one that made Moon shine.
No. His property in North Saco, he sold to the people that were moonshiners by trade.
Yeah, it's Ash Swamp Road.
Yeah, Ash Swamp Road. Yeah. My first taste of hard apple cider was at his place in North Saco. Wow. For some reason, he had befriended my father, so me being a young guy and him having two daughters and this type of thing, I offered to help him move, whatnot. Well, Raymond and I got into his hard cider over there. Oh, my word. That's another whole story.
Yeah, that loosened you up.
Was it good? Was it good?
Yeah.
The guy up in Wold used to make it.
Yeah.
The hard cider, but tastes just as good as the sweet cider.
I don't really remember the taste. I just remember getting a little blurry eyed.
A half gallon, like the orange juice, spin the half gallon jug there with a grip there.
Yeah.
I think 50 cents for a half gallon.
I'll tell you, my oldest son lives in North Carolina now, and every time I come home from North Carolina, I come home with moonshine.
Well, if we head up 114, where the school was, the apex of the road there. We come down, it was Meserve on your right, Duane Huff on your left, then Tolman, and then we go along for a ways, and then it's Jimmy Mary and his operation. And the next house there was a trailer with a family, I think the name was Bly.
Yep.
Is that correct?
Yep.
All right. And we know who the people were across from Bly was Story.
That was my uncle.
Delma?
Yep, it was my uncle. My mother's older brother.
Well, I'll tell you a little story about him.
I'm sure Delma liked his alcohol.
He was a good worker.
He was a carpenter.
Yeah, very good. Yeah. He come in at a big blue Oldsmobile, about the color of these seat backs. And he always got out, opened the gas vent, and pumped his own gas. Independent little guy. And he come in this day, and he was as white as your paper, white as a sheet. And I said, what'll it be, Delman? He says, fill her up. He says, but I haven't got time to get out. I got a problem. And so I started it, and I went over, and I said, you want me to check the oil in this rake? And he says, no, it's all right. He says, I got to get into the hospital. He opened the door, swung his leg, and it was a compound fracture. Ooh. His leg was right up through the skin on his leg, the bone. And I said, why don't I go in and see if we can get the rescue unit up here. We had a rescue unit then. No. He said, I can drive myself in. I got one good leg. This is an automatic. Like stubborn.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he drove himself in, and he was rest of the summer in a cast. Yeah. He'd fallen, he said, 16 feet.
Probably fell off a roof.
Yeah, he did. He was 16 feet. He fell and landed in some rubble. He says, if I hadn't landed on that rubble, I'd been all right. But he says, I landed on that rubble and twisted my leg. He says, snapped it right off. Huh. But he was a tough little character. Yeah. Well, I went to school with his boys, and you did too, didn't you?
No, which one?
Behind me.
Yeah. Well, Lloyd, I went to school with Dickie, and Lloyd was older.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lloyd was a couple of years older. Then Jimmy was older than I am.
Yeah. Jimmy was the oldest one. There was Shirley. And Lloyd. Lloyd's dead. Dickie's older than me.
Dickie's down Montville.
Montville, okay.
Yep. He's a good guy.
Yeah, retired from Westford Fire Department.
They don't make him any better than him. He's a good guy. All right, well, we're headed down, and is the next place Presby?
Yes, Roy Presby. Did he work in the mill?
I don't know.
No.
I remember him, but I don't.
Well, you go by Presby, and then there's a road went in there, and it was a guy named Mazarell was living in the cellar hole.
Yep.
He was different. Then there was Babkirk, and they had kids that were in my sister's class. Across the street from them was a stucco building. Now, who was that?
Dick Donovan, when I know it.
Dick what?
Dick Donovan.
Yeah.
And boy, Ricky, and I can't think of his daughter's name. And before that, I think it was a LeBrec lived there, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. I remember the name LeBrec now. Yeah. That comes. They had a 59 Edsel. That was a buff covered. It was there for a long time. They had an engine problem with it and didn't want to spend the money to fix it. There was a across the street from there was Molly Meserve. Had a little house right there on the road going into your place, isn't it, Bert, now?
Yes.
All right. Homey little house. You walk into the kitchen and stove there and everything. It was just a pleasant little place.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they were nice people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, nice folks. And across from them, I think the name was Williams. A colored guy.
Yeah.
I think he drove truck. Mitch Williams.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, now who was the Meserve that was right across from Williams that set in there?
Cliff.
Cliff Meserve, right.
Cliff Meserve, and what was his brother's name? Ralph.
Ralph lived up the next house.
Yeah, next house.
Okay, let me get that. And Cliff.
Yeah, Cliff had a trailer there eventually.
No, he had a, I don't know if it was Ralph or Cliff, had a girl that was a year ahead of me in school. Little shot.
Diane.
Yeah,
Diane.
Nice person.
Yeah.
Nice person.
That's Cliff's daughter.
Cliff's daughter. Now, she was in my, she's 2 years ahead of me. She's in my cousin Charlie's class. I see her down here at the doctor's office. I see everybody that I know in the doctor's office. and she knew who I was right off the bat, and I placed her because of her size. She's just a miniature person, you know. Nice person. On that next corner across from Cliff and Ralph was Mossy Lunt.
Yeah.
There was some Lunts that lived there.
Lunts.
And he ended up making a program for the University of Maine on trappers up north. What was the name? We watched that here one night and got everybody laughing, Becky.
I don't think that was Mossy. His brother, Richard, used to hunt and trap.
Yeah. All right. Well, it was out of that house because you described where he lived.
Yeah.
So that was Not Mossy, but who?
Richard.
Richard.
I'm guessing. I don't know. Because there was, I don't know how many there was there. That was a big family.
In that in that little house. I didn't know how. They must have stacked them in like cardboard.
There was two girls. And it was Mossy, Richard, Nicker. I don't know what his name was.
No, Nicker. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think there was another boy there.
Well, one Mossy of them worked out the mill, didn't he? One of them?
Maybe.
And then he worked for the city of Westbrook.
That was Richard.
Richard, okay.
That was Richard. But Mossy committed suicide right there.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
You had to be around that.
I remember that vaguely.
I remember a death there, but I don't remember who.
He had that little garage there.
Yeah.
And he started the car and
gassed himself. That was pretty popular back in the 50s. A lot of folks are using vacuum cleaner holes.
It seemed like a lot of that going around over there.
Yeah, kind of. Now, the next place to that, wasn't that Neddo running a little store there?
Yeah, little store.
Yeah. Beside him, there was... oh, my gracious, they had two kids in school. Not, it was a French name.
Saucier?
Saucier.
That's what you got written here, Saucier.
Saucier.
Yeah.
And beside them was a Rowe family. David and... They didn't have much.
No.
Yeah.
Daughter Sandy Rowe, who went to school with my daughter, I believe.
I don't know.
Redhead, yeah.
Yeah, well...
Nice girl.
One of the boys... was get drafted with the Corps, and he got hooked up with the medics. He was always, maybe it was David, it was one of them, and he got hooked up, and the medics, of course, they were Navy people, but with the Corps, and they helped him out going back to school to become a male nurse or something. I don't know what the connection was there, but I heard the story that they all chipped in, and when he got back stateside, got him enrolled in a school and helped him out. He was a really nice person. After them, we got Grenier, Amos Grenier.
Yeah.
He worked for the state. He worked for the bridge division, I believe. Then we get the next one I got here, and there may be another house in there, I'm not sure, was Henry Nelson. He ran a little half-hearted garage there. I think he worked for a while for Wooded Norston Chevrolet. Yeah, he was crippled.
Yeah.
Something happened to him. I don't know, accident or what.
Tipped over right by the high school.
Oh, okay.
On 114, broke his back.
Yeah. Yeah. The next one beside him was Curlew. Now, there was a house in between. Who was the guy that drove truck?
Arthur
Seavey.
Arthur Seavey.
Yeah, he drove truck for the state. And he used to visit Vail every afternoon.
Yeah.
They used to...
go out back.
Yeah, they'd go out back. Yeah.
That's the guy we were trying to think of yesterday. Remember, we were talking
yesterday? Yeah, well, yeah, they go out back. This Kenny. I found funny.
Kenny.
They go out back, and he had a patch room out there, and he kept some refreshment out there. And they'd go out there and have a refreshment, and then Leon would say to Stevie, let's go in and see if Sadie will give us one. So she kept the bottle in the refrigerator. And she'd make them get in back in the little kitchenette they had there.
Yeah.
And she'd give them a little glass, you know. And they had to tease her like the Dickens before she'd do it. And then she'd give them each a little glass, and they'd make a big deal out of it, you know. And then just as soon as they cleared there, they'd go back out in the shop, out back again.
Have another one.
Oh, yeah. Characters.
Used to call that the pink room out there.
That's right.
And all these little pigeonholes with nuts, bolts, and all.
Oh, yeah.
And then there'd be a fifth of Seagram's in one of them.
Yeah. He was a character. Nice person, though.
Oh, yeah, certainly was.
Uh, you're going down here and we get the Curlews, and then what was the dance hall that was there?
Naughty Pines.
Naughty Pines.
My Uncle Mac used to play clarinet.
Is that right? Bought,
and he played there.
Yeah.
Did that burn down?
Yes, it did.
Okay, I do remember.
I often wondered what started the fire, but
I can remember him playing over there when I was a little kid.
Yeah, Naughty Pines.
And I don't know if it was part of the S.D. Warren band, because he was in the S.D. Warren band, or rather just some group that they had going or something or what.
There was always a lot of activity there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I too little to remember all much about it. But
now, on the opposite side of the road from that was the Wheeler. And then I got Gus Perez. And then in there, there was a colored family, the only one in town.
Myers.
The Myers. And I can't remember. There was other people in there.
Was the house right beyond Myers? What the heck was his name?
That wasn't Perez. Was it Gus?
They was going down. He was down before it. There was Perez, Myers. What the heck was his name?
Which house is it?
Kind of across from Grenier.
Yeah.
He was right across from Grenier. But I never could put a name there. I never had any contact with those people I know of.
Can't think of it. It'll come to me eventually.
Oh, yeah. 1 o'clock tonight. Yeah. Get up, go to the bathroom,
like
remember
me
everything.
Think of this stuff in the middle of the night.
Yeah. Oh, it's wicked. Now, we go on that we get down here to the corner of the new road, the Elmer Plummer. He used to do all the butchering around.
Yeah.
He had a couple of brothers.
Didn't that sit up and back off the road a little bit?
He was on the very corner, but there was
the abattoir.
I remember a slaughterhouse.
Slaughterhouse
was back. That was the abattoir.
Okay.
Yeah. That was across the road. On the same side of the road was Albert Libby, but there was a house right across from right across the new road from that guy I just plumber. There's an old house there that's been there forever. I don't know who that family is,
that's where I grew up.
Is it?
Till up 59.
All right. So that's your dad's name was...
But we wasn't... Well, 59 we was there, but who the heck did they sell it to? Briggs ended up there.
Briggs.
Earl and Briggs, but he didn't get there till probably 70.
So you're saying that house was a Skillin's house?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And your dad's name was?
Willis.
Did you happen to know my aunt? She was Evangeline Libby before she married my uncle.
Evangeline? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she was my aunt, married Jim.
Yeah.
And they lived on the Mitchell Hill Road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I knew them.
Yeah, she's
my aunt
and uncle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Neat.
Two kids, Norman and Celia. Jim couldn't do enough for Celia. It's all about Celia, You know, you wouldn't even know they had a son. Not that they treated him bad, but it was all about Celia.
Oh. We used to Josh Libby's place there. We play hockey.
Yeah.
With Jimmy. Gus Mitchell, you remember him?
I remember the name.
Worked for something. Well, Josh Libby, Josh's mother brought him up. I don't know what the circumstances was, but they brought him up, and he moved to Portland there when he got married and worked for Central Maine Power. But every Sunday, we'd play hockey down there in the pond.
So now this is across from the new road. You were up in at the reserves. And Libby's and the abattoir. I know those were Missouri's that run that, wasn't it?
Yeah.
All right. Because one of them was married to Dorenzo.
Right, Pauline.
Yeah. All right. That'd been Tony's mom.
Yeah.
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 Okay. Now, those other farms that set way in there are Libby's, right?
That was Josh Libby.
Yeah. Okay. And there wasn't anything after Albert Libby until you get down around that corner.
Walter Braley.
Walter Braley had a cement block garage, and then beside him was the Huff boys.
Well, there was
Dwayne and...
Yeah, but there's a little house between them.
Yeah.
Walter Bardet lived there, probably in the 60s.
Bardet.
Then the Huffs.
Now, the Bardet, now you mentioned that name. Let's see. Bud Robinson's wife was a Bardet.
Yeah.
I think. Well,
brother,
so same family?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And his father lived over on Running Hill Road, across from Everett.
Is that right?
Yeah. Right on top of the hill there where Ronnie Libby lives now.
Okay. All right, so we go back across the new road, and there's a couple houses. I don't know who there was. There's a gravel pit there on the left by Frank Pula. And Joe Brim lived on the corner, is that correct?
Around the corner.
Yeah.
Johnny Brim lived right on the corner.
Yeah.
Which is Joe's brother.
Right. Worked for the state.
No, Johnny worked for some S.D. Warren.
Okay.
And Joe worked for the state.
Yeah. Okay.
And Joe's sister was married to Don Hersey.
That's right. I forget all about that. Yeah, everybody tied together pretty good up there.
Oh, yeah. They didn't venture too far.
No, and not a lot of gasoline in the tank.
Transportation was like it is today, where you
no, no,
marry somebody from across the country. You know?
Yeah, well, Don did, because he grew up in Dunstan.
That's right.
But they probably went to school together.